that was going to take a couple of days, that will last for a couple of days. Well, that's happening starting Tuesday, August 23rd, continuing through Friday, August 26th, from the hours between, from the starting from 8 a.m. until 3 p.m. Okay? So, what I've said before in the past, this shutdown is routine, although it's rare that it happens during the daytime, and it's not just affecting us. It's affecting other radio stations as well, WKCR, WBGO, and WMYC. So I'm just putting it out there, just getting it in your brain so you will know that from August 23rd until August 26th, between the hours of 8 a.m. to 3 p.m., there will be a transmitter maintenance shutdown. Okay? Do not worry. WBAI will be streaming live. No, will be streaming within those hours, even though the terrestrial air will be affected. So, no terrestrial air. But for those people who are listening online, just go to WBAI.org and you should be fine. And you can give a collective sigh of relief saying this, that, oh, the Illuminati did not catch us at this time. Oh, no. I can't guarantee the future, but for damn sure, it ain't it for what's happening. So, between the days of August 23rd to August 26th, okay? All right, enough of me talking. Stay tuned for Radio GBE NYC with Imhotep Gary Bird. Coming up, it's 2 minutes past 7 p.m.
Greetings, name of God and the ancestors, in whose footsteps we walk, and upon whose ideas we fly. I'm Imhotep Gary Bird, the Radio Grill, telling our story, lifting every voice, and coming to you live from Heritage Village, USA, on this Friday night, and greeting you throughout the tri-state, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, across the USA, throughout planet Africa, and of course, the global black experience diaspora. Welcome, it's Radio GBE NYC on WBAI 99.5 FM, New York. And welcoming you to our Friday edition of our broadcast, of course, Radio in the Key of Life and the Global Beat Experience, where the message is in the music. A lot going on, and we have a lot to share with you tonight. Some special guests will be with us in the broadcast, and a couple of special music mixes that we'll share with you inside of tonight's broadcast. And welcome to you all wherever you are coming from tonight. My first guest who'll be joining us this evening at 7:15 is a brother who is well known, certainly to anyone who is, if they will, on the activist side of things over the last several decades here in New York. And we are certainly very pleased to have him to start things off with us tonight inside of the broadcast. He'll be joining us, as I said, in just a few minutes. I'm speaking, of course, of brother attorney Michael Hardy, who is going to be joining us tonight inside of the program, talk about several different cases that are happening around us in terms of what they mean and the significance of them as they move through these roaring 2020s, so to speak. Some of you may have heard one of the stories that we'll talk about, or actually you've probably heard a couple of them, Well, the first one, obviously, will deal with the situation concerning Breonna Taylor. The Kentucky Attorney General who investigated the case is now saying the decision not to charge any officers in her death was ultimately in a grand jury's hands. We'll talk a bit about that story and some of the amazing dynamics that are surrounding that incident there as well when Brother Michael joins us this evening. Also, we'll talk with Attorney Hardy about something that is happening right now that I think very easy for things to get buried in the news the way that, you know, there are so many news stories that are happening right now. But the NYPD has been ordered to hand over documents that detail surveillance of Black Lives Matter protests following a lawsuit. Again, the New York Police Department has been ordered to disclose, listen to me carefully, thousands of records of how the force procured and used facial recognition technology against Black Lives Matter protesters. This is after the New York Supreme Court ruled in favor of Amnesty International and the Surveillance Technology Oversight Project on their joint Article 78 lawsuit. We'll talk about that with Brother Mike when he joins us. That's a big one. Some of y'all who remember, I forget, there was a thing they used to have, the Black Desk, that's what it was, when we were at WLIB and doing much of the kind of activist programming that we do today, frankly, but when WLIB was hot and active on that kind of level, there was a point where NYPD had like a Black Desk, Reggie, where they would listen to WLIB to monitor all the different things that were going on, you know, if you will, in the hood, protest this, the other.
I remember that.
You know what I'm saying, man? I'm telling you, it's like it come back again, but with a greater technical flair inside of it, certainly. And we'll touch base on what that means, facial recognition technology and all that. I mean, there's a lot going on in that whole area. Anyway, we'll talk about that this evening in the broadcast. And some of you may have actually heard a story that you maybe needed some clarification about, and I can understand, you know, again, so many things are happening around us. But the Central Park Five became the Exonerated Six. This is a scenario which occurred in which on July 27th, Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg announced Stephen Lopez's exoneration from the Central Park Five case. Central Park Five was 1/6. Stephen Lopez never found himself portrayed as a main character in the Ken Burns documentary or the Oprah Winfrey series. But apparently he, too, was arrested and indicted in his youth for the rape and attempted murder that occurred in that situation with white jogger Trisha Mailey. Very deep. Okay, this is, of course, along with the quintet, as it says in the article, of a Black and brown teen co-defendants back in 1989. That's a new development that occurred, of course, in terms of the eyes of many. But Manhattan DA Bragg also appeared at the National Action Network just last week. So when we talk to Brother Hardy, we'll address that in our conversation as well. 7:30 tonight, what's going on? WGO in the house. Boy, talk about a global stage that is moving into some kind of deep territory. There's no question about that. There's a place where we are looking at a scenario that ultimately seems becoming more and more dangerous by the moment. Herb Boyd, Hall of Fame award-winning journalist, best-selling author, of course, and a senior reporter for the Amsterdam News will join us in a What's Going On segment. As you know, Nancy Pelosi has taken her Taiwan trip. There's a song by the Marvelettes back in the day called Danger, Heartbreak Ahead. Danger, Nuclear Threat Ahead is what we're sort of picturing here with the firing of some warning missiles and whatnot that are a part of that scenario. And a lot of people are saying, and I'm talking not a lot of people just in general, that's too happening too, but I'm hearing military experts who are commenting about it and saying it's only going to take one mistake, literally. And, hey, look, no matter which side we're on or which, you know, country or whatever we're coming from, everybody's human. And so mistakes can be made. And that's where that statement is coming from, that we're one mistake away from nuclear action, literally. Anyway, we'll get into that with Brother Herb when he joins us on the in terms of the Pelosi trip and what that is representing in terms of the United States, China, and then also obviously Russia comes into the picture. They found Sister Griner guilty. I think it's a 9 or 10 year sentence with
nine, with a
deal now in place that will represent a swap that could release her from that situation. We'll talk about that. Also, President Biden still has COVID. Okay. Anyway, I put that against the backdrop of some people, should he run again? He has to get out of this COVID thing, first of all. Everybody's talking about, he's fine, everything's great, you know, but that positivity index is still maintaining itself. We'll get into that. But he's got to be smiling about one thing. That is the jobs report with an unprecedented level of unemployment. And certainly in this instance, employment levels that are back to a kind of a pre level in terms of what happened with the pandemic. So President Biden, Rich, you heard him say, like, President Biden was like, what recession? I guess he has some energy to get off on that one, and I'm sure we understand the politics behind that. Also, the Justice Department and the January 6th Trump impact, all that, the midterms, all that in our conversation. Also, a note, President Lyndon Johnson signed the Voting Rights Act in August, actually, I think it was August 6th, not in front of me right now, but essentially this is the bill that suspended literacy tests and allocated federal examiners to the South. They may need those examiners again, the way everything is shaping up. We'll talk to Brother Herb about that. And on the COVID trail, which I was mentioning just a moment ago, we are very, very pleased to have a brother joining us who is certainly, as they say, a member of our Radio GBE family, a member of the WBAI family, a member of the, if you will, Global Black Experience family, and certainly with great, great appreciation for all the tremendous work that he's done. With reports now, as I've been giving them, of 100 million COVID infections possibly coming fall, winter, rising positivity rates across the USA and even right here in New York City in the tri-state. Dr. Kamal Kakai will join us in the broadcast tonight. As many of you know, the founder of Healing Health Services and host of Quantum Medicine, I heard Tuesdays at 2 p.m. right here at WBI. He'll join us at 7:45 tonight to kind of put the COVID pictures in perspective and maybe talk with us also about what we got to do to plan for the days ahead. So COVID-19 update, and there's a interesting tape that Dr. Kakai shared with me related to the projection and analysis of COVID as being a bioweapon. We'll touch base on that, too. Second hour in our Global Beat experience, I mentioned, and a bit of a salute there, musically speaking. We'll be saluting the king of what they called punk funk. And this was he, as a matter of fact, and Prince had that kind of thing going related to the punk funk thing. And we'll actually be giving a bit of a moment for our brother Rick James in the broadcast tonight. And his musical contribution to the message side of things with two message classics that that he shared. Rick is, as many of you know, from Buffalo, New York. We are not only homeboys. He used to be my flanker back when I was doing my football thing back in the day. And he and I both ironically wound up on Motown Records, which is who could even predict or know these things, right? Impossible. Anyway, two amazing songs from Brother Rick James, the late Rick James, which we'll share with you in the next hour. We'll talk a bit about what's behind that. Then Vinette K. Price will join us this evening at 8:30, Globe Trotting inside of Radio GBE at WBAI, Radio GBE NYC. I heard you, Reggie. I picked up the vibe. I got it. Radio GBE NYC with Sister Vinette K. Price.
I'm
and then our word
approved.
From Bird. You know, I do, brother. That's right. And so Vinette Price will wrap things up, and then our word from Bird will close it out in this evening's experience here at WBI. Before I get started, just a quick note. We are listener-sponsored radio. The tower drive has ended. So, you know, we got that done. And we're certainly, obviously, still going to be needing your support in the days ahead because it is listener-sponsored radio. But sometimes it's extremely important to take time to say thank you. And that's what this is, a moment for us to say thank you to all of you across the tri-state and some of you from around the country and in the Global Black Experience diaspora who made your donations to WBAI to help us to build this tower of power that's going to be so necessary in these quote-unquote roaring 20s that we're dealing with, the 2020s. All right, standing by to join me is the brother that I mentioned a moment ago who, as I said before, he is certainly far from being a stranger in the community, a well-respected member of the Radio GBE family and the activist family of brothers and sisters all across this country who stand on the front line fighting for justice for our community. He is joining us tonight, as they say, with a range of topics and coming off of some traveling experience that I'm pleased to know he took some time for us tonight to be in our broadcast. Many of you certainly have watched him and the incredible work that he's done as a co-founder, Executive Vice President and General Counsel for the National Action Network. It is my great pleasure to welcome my brother, Attorney Michael Hardy, to the broadcast tonight. Brother Mike, good evening. Hotep.
Hotep.
Yeah, my brother. How you feeling, man?
Yes, sir, Dr. Bird. I'm good. Hey, I'm good.
Hey. You sounded good though when I talked to you today. Usually when people do a little traveling, you know, they have a little weariness in their vibe, but you had this kind of like energetic vibe, like you were ready to get to it or something.
Absolutely. Well, you know, being out in the great Northwest will do that to you, you know.
You got a little invigorated, huh? It's great. Brother Mike, I said I wanted to start first tonight with the Breonna Taylor story and what we are seeing emerging from this as far as what has happened with the issue and the decision related to the police officers in that case.
Well, Gary, you know, it's really very instructive, if you will, because you have to say, you know, under the Biden administration and Kristen Clark, who's the Deputy Attorney General of Civil Rights, they have truly used the power of that office and the law in the most appropriate ways, particularly as it relates to the charging of police officers. And we've already seen them prosecute the officers in Minnesota. We've seen them prosecute the officers in Georgia. And now we see them prosecuting the officers in the Breonna Taylor case. And here it was very challenging because, as you know, those officers were not charged in state court. And in fact, one of the officers, the one who shot into the neighbors, was charged but was acquitted in state court. But they have very thoroughly, and I think part of it grows out of, you know, they had also commenced what's called the pattern or practice investigation mm-hmm. of the Louisville Police Department. And I think growing out of that, you know, they came upon that information to show that these officers violated Breonna Taylor and her rights by staging the whole scenario for the warrant that led them into the apartment and then covered it up. So they lied and falsified the warrant, and then they actually met to do a cover-up. So this is a very significant prosecution because but for the efforts, you have to commend Kristen Clark and the Civil Rights Division, because in many ways, but for that additional effort on these parts, these officers really would have gotten away with murder.
There's a place, Mike, where, you know, we certainly have seen enough cases involving police brutality where, you know, the officer can, you know, either be clearly in the wrong or there's certainly some debate about it. But this has another dimension to it that I think it's important for our listeners and for the community and everybody to recognize. And that is the issue of conspiracy counts. Explain that to our folks so they understand how this case opened up the window into that aspect.
Yeah. Well, you know, conspiracy, you know, basically defines when people join together to plan. You know, conspiracy is a plan to commit an act. And in the criminal world, it's an act to commit a crime. And in many respects, as I was referring to earlier, these officers not only conspired to falsify, the affidavits, but then they also conspired to cover up any evidence of their actions with regard to those violations. And, and that's very significant. And in fact, we saw that here in New York, in the Louima case, where there was somewhat of a conspiracy with regard to the cover up of the sodomy that was committed against Louima in the in New York City back in 87, I believe. I don't want to get the year wrong. So that's why I was saying this was very, very significant, because this in no shape or form was an easy case. This wasn't just about, whether they pulled out a gun and shot, and whether the manner in which that shooting happened was a violation of federal civil rights laws. You know, this was a real effort of work and investigative work to really uncover the conspiracy that, again, led to the death of Breonna Taylor. And it was targeted on Breonna Taylor.
That's right. I want to also explore this area that you're referring to in terms of the second indictment. This is with the two civil rights charges and the alleging that Hankison willfully used unconstitutionally excessive force while acting in his official capacity as a police officer. This is back to what you said, when he fired his weapon into Taylor's apartment through a covered window, covered glass floor, and as I understand it, and also the officers endangered people in the adjoining apartment as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And on that level, in some respects, it's surprising that he was not convicted on the state level, because, how more visible does it have to be when a police officer is known to have fired blindly into an apartment, which then subsequently traveled into another apartment of people who were not technically even part of the false warrant that they had for going after Breonna Taylor. And so, yes, this was very significant in that respect. Because under the federal civil rights laws, the criminal laws, that did in fact constituted a criminal violation of excessive force.
There's a story moving from there to New York City, a story just, as they say, breaking news. NYPD has been ordered to hand over documents detailing surveillance of Black Lives Matter protests following a lawsuit in which the New York Supreme Court ruled in favor of Amnesty International and the Surveillance Technology Oversight Project. In terms of the meaning of this, when I was doing the opening tonight, I talked about, okay, we got the NYPD being ordered to disclose thousands of records of how the force procured and used facial recognition technology against Black Lives Matter. I said to Reggie, it takes you back to the days of the Black Desk and WLIB. Reverend Sharpton, you remember all that, of course, as I do. But this is with a higher tech edge inside of it, i.e. the facial recognition technology. Talk a bit about this decision and the significance of it.
Yeah, well, there are two levels there, Gary, right? There's one, a reminder of where modern technology is at, and how that technology can play into law enforcement and investigative work in an improper manner. And that's exactly what happened here. And again, there's a history here, as you mentioned, the Black Death, and if you remember, going back to the late 60s, early 70s, a lot of this comes out of the surveillance of political activists in general the late 60s. And there was a major federal case, which is kind of known as the Handshoe case, but it was basically that was the name of the plaintiff who brought a case against the Special Services Division because in New York, because they were particularly infiltrating, you know, public activities of political mm-hmm. actors and activists, and that's a violation of rights. And in this respect, they are doing the same thing by using this very advanced technology, facial recognition, to not only infiltrate and operate against legitimate public protests, but then to also use it potentially in a nefarious way by getting facial recognition and then trying to match it to different or new situations and give them, you know, sort of improper leads into other potential criminal activity or to try to create something and put people in places by using the facial recognition technology. So this is an important case. You know, it's kind of floating under the radar. So you really, again, you know, have to thank the Surveillance Technology and Oversight Project. And I believe Amnesty International was also involved in bringing this to court. So it was a very important effort. And, of course, again, a decision by the court that, you know, always, you know, nowadays, right, when judges do something right, you've got some of the local media and national media sometimes that will then jump on the court. And so this in many ways was not only a well brought case, but then a well made decision by the court.
Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg appeared at the National Action Network just a week ago, and really right now is in a story that broke news across the week concerning the Central Park Five becoming the Exonerated Six. This story involves the attorney's office, Manhattan District Attorney's Office, and the Central Park Five, and in this case, an individual who really was not really so much part of being projected as a main character. This is Stephen Lopez, and any number of projects have been done, the Ken Burns piece, the Oprah Winfrey, etc. But he too was arrested and indicted in his youth for the rape and attempted murder of the white jogger Trisha Mailey, alongside of the brothers that we all identify as well. So now while the others are wrongfully accused of the crime, vindicated in 2002, Lopez pled guilty to the lesser charge of robbing another victim on that fateful night to avoid the rape case, and remained on the hook for a bargain up until it said this week, meaning this past week. Talk a bit about what's happened here in terms of this decision now by Judge Ellen Bybin, who has granted Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg an acknowledgement in relationship to the wrongful activity that case represents.
Yeah, Gary. And, you know, this once again begins with the circumstances that in many times poor folks find themselves in. You know, Lopez, first of all, we know that the main part of the Central Park Five were badgered into false confessions in some cases, you know, were badgered in many ways, but they went to trial and they were wrongfully convicted. Lopez, in essence, you know, basically just cut a deal to save himself or believed to save himself when there was really no basis for him to do that. And again, but for the fact that you're relying on a level of representation that you can invest in. So you're making sure, and in his case, he's making sure that he wasn't going to be in the jail for the red brag coming forward, knowing the real facts here and stepping forward and saying, hey, you know, we cannot leave Stephen Lopez behind and not do the right thing by him, because he was part of the same circumstances that led to the convictions of the other five. So you know, it was a very courageous act on the attorney general, on the district attorney's part, to stand strong and bring this case forth to be exonerated.
That's right. I want to read the quote from Manhattan D.A. Bragg. He said, "This matter cast a long shadow over our criminal justice system for a long time. Today we take a step forward, but I think we should not forget one of the main pillars of our post-conviction justice unit is applying forward lessons," he says. So we've got this specific of Mr. Lopez's conviction, but we also, he says, have to generally look at things like how people are questioned that result in false confessions or DNA analysis and forensics. Looking at that, he says, and applying those lessons going forward is very important.
Yeah, no, it really is. And just think of, you know, the Central Park case ended up being a high profile case. People, you know, really spent, you had a lot of media interest in it. So you had a lot of different factors that have investigated various aspects of that case to bring to light much of the wrongdoing that was done. But just think about some of the people that are in prison today, basically having pled out a case that, you know, because you go before court and your own attorney sometimes will say, well, if you go to trial and you blow trial, you're going to be looking at 25 years. You know, they're offering you, you know, 5 years. You know, you need to consider that. I mean, that happens in real time in many cases when, you know, as Reverend Sharpton and others have often said, you know, or Johnny Cochran said it best, you know, you can wake up in the morning and know that in no way, shape or form or nowhere had you gone where you committed any kind of particular crime. But that doesn't stop someone from accusing you of a crime. And if you can afford a full-fledged defense, you're often in a position of pleading to something just to save your life, basically. And that's unfortunate, and that's what happened to Mr. Lopez. And thank, you know, all of those involved in at least bringing to light the circumstances that allowed them to exonerate him and at least have that. So he can go through. He's still a young man because he's only 48 years old, even though he lost a big part of his life.
Absolutely. Attorney Hardy, we know that on the weekend, especially on Saturdays, all roads lead to the House of Justice. Why don't you give our listeners the particulars and also let them know how they can get in touch with the National Action Network online as well?
Well, you can always call the National Action Network at 877-626-4651. That's toll free. You can reach us online at nationalactionnetwork.net. And we do our Saturday action rallies every Saturday at the House of Justice on 145th and Lenox Avenue in the great village of Harlem in Manhattan. And we're there every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. and we will be there tomorrow. And we look forward to people coming out, and they can also listen on all of the various mechanisms that are out there, radio, TV, and streaming, if they can't get to the rally. But we love to see people at the House of Justice on Saturday mornings.
Attorney Michael Hardy, he is co-founder, executive vice president, and general counsel of the National Action Network, and our brother. Proud to have him with us tonight. And brother, appreciate you taking the time. As I said, on the travel level, I know people had that kind of weariness, but when I talked to you, it was like, yo, I'm ready to go. I love
ready
it.
Ready to go. Thank you, doctor. Appreciate
much love,
you.
My brother. And give Rev my best, please.
I certainly will.
All right, Michael Hardy with us tonight inside of Radio GBE at WBAI. I'm Imhotep Gary Burt. This is Radio GBE NYC, reminding you it's listener-sponsored radio. And all you got to do is visit our donation site at give2WBAI.org, and you'll find a range of different ways that you can support the radio station, and ultimately you'll keep us in the air. And obviously, in terms of those of you who contributed to our Tower of Power, you certainly are making that possible. We continue inside of our broadcast on this Friday night as we find out what's going on. Friday, we always look forward to having the chance to have our brother joining us in this segment. He is, as many of you know, a brother who I have the greatest measure of respect, love, and appreciation for, and certainly as many across this country and throughout planet Africa have grown to appreciate his commentary, his analysis, the many books, of course, that he's written, and his general, if you will, maintenance in terms of the issue of keeping us moving forward as a people and as a community. He is a Hall of Fame award-winning journalist, best-selling author, senior reporter of the New York Amsterdam News, and my brother from the Great Lakes. It's a pleasure to welcome Brother Herb Boyd to the air tonight in Radio GBE NYC. Brother Herb, good evening. How you doing?
All right. I'm going to take you on the road with me.
I'm the hype man, brother. I'm the hype man. You know I got you.
Right.
No question. Mm-hmm. Herb, there is a moment mm-hmm. that we are in, and you know, I know that stations or networks or whatever, you know, they pride themselves on coming in saying breaking news. You know, that's the big thing, right? And I am going to start with the breaking news concerning Pelosi, the Taiwan trip, danger ahead, nuclear threat. But as I was monitoring some of what was going on, I see here where the White House has now summoned the Chinese ambassador, Jing Gang, who's been called to the White House after China's launch of ballistic missiles in response to the visit by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. I've heard military experts, I mentioned this in the bird's eye views, who have said we're one mistake away from nuclear activity.
My goodness. You know, we certain concern coming from the White House and all of the military advisors and everything about the speaker going to Taiwan, that it might precipitate that you might have, you know, some danger zones there, some tensions that already exist between the U.S. And China are going to be exacerbated. And apparently she wasn't even on the ground 10 minutes when suddenly the Chinese announced that certain kind of sanctions were in motion. They were going to cut off the flow of sand, for example, which is so critical in the construction industry in Taiwan. They said, "Hey, you get no more sand." So then they made other moves in terms of inhibiting the flow of materials into Taiwan. So all of that was pretty much predicted, that they were going to take some kind of action on this. They were not going to sit idly by and allow that to happen. And even on the ground, it was kind of mixed views and people turning out at the Hotel Hyatt there in Taipei. It was a lot of people was welcoming her there. At the same time, you had a large number of people who were protesting the Chinese government for allowing her to come into the country. So here you have a situation that is already one that is crowded with tension, suddenly gets another level, another pinch. And now you talk about, you know, the nuclear situation, to say nothing of missiles being, you know, tested in the zone.
Yep.
So all of this seems to indicate that it was not a good... people were asking, you know, why did she choose to go at this time?
Exactly.
And that's what the president, that's what the administration was saying, that's what the military advisors were saying, that it's not an opportune time to make the visit. It's just too much going on in terms of world tension, the situation in Russia and Ukraine. There's no time to be doing that. And why are you doing it at this point? Well, if you know her record, she's been, over the years, a very, very staunch advocate, you know, of human rights. And she's been on China's case in terms of civil rights violations over there. So that's a continuation, as also to assure the Taiwanese government. And, of course, you know, very few countries recognize that it, as being a country. They kind of go along with China's notion as a rogue nation. But, but the U.S. feels a need to go in there and not to stop Nancy Pelosi from going over there in order to assure them that we still stand by Taiwan and the whole question of democracy. So we'll see how this plays out. It doesn't look good. It's a very dangerous moment.
There's a place, Herb, where it brings up the issue of culture. And I say that to the extent that obviously, you know, politics are the order of the day, and that's easily seen in the situation. And politics have their own nuances, but there are also cultural nuances that operate in these equations when you start talking about a place like China. And, you know, the famous, I guess, referencing within the context of what I'm speaking to would be face, F-A-C-E, face. And that ultimately the dynamic of an Asian population in terms of as ancient as China, for that matter, that the issue of saving face has always been one of those things that writers would talk about, that it's a major part of the culture. I'm not sure how that was dealt with in this particular case, but very certainly it does pose, if you will, cultural as well as then subsequently political problems ahead, even inside of China itself.
And certainly economic problems as well.
Yes, yes, that's right.
It has a whole spectrum of concerns there, and certainly you're on point in suggesting that, and it's got a historical precedence. We can look at that across the ages, see what goes on. And it's really a continuation of the Cold War.
Very much so.
I mean, yes. That's what you have going on now. It's never, the Cold War never ended, and from time to time they heat it up. And that's what's heating up now. And it's very, very precarious in terms of how it's going to work out. The U.S. is, they're poised to deal with the situation, obviously. But at the same time, you know, the Chinese are just really upset that they kind of breached. That's kind of an accord that goes on between these nations out there in terms of recognition. So
that's
this,
right.
This is a They gave recognition to Taiwan, and that can is a part of a whole a slap across the face. I suppose the saving
Absolutely.
Face, that's a slap across the face.
Yeah, now forget saving face. It's a slap across the face. You're exactly right, yeah. No doubt. Herb, keeping on the international level, obviously Russia has frowned Brittany Griner guilty in her, as they say, highly heralded court case, and some a 9-year sentence as well. But now the possibilities of a U.S.-Russo negotiation, a swap deal that could give her release. What are your thoughts about what we're seeing develop on that end? Because obviously one of the things that is happening now is there's a clamoring concerning other prisoners, if you will, in Russia, U.S. prisoners, and the issue of their release as being a part of this, or certainly, if you will, a place where some level of acknowledgement of movement being demanded by others as well.
Well, it was pretty much a certainty that she was going to be convicted. 90% of the people who go into the Russian courts.
Exactly.
That she was facing in terms of drugs and so that was automatic on their part. The only thing that could save her at this point, of course, the swap could go down, but they're going back and forth. I don't think it's a swap of equivalency.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, here's someone, you know, the violation, which you said was unintentional. She had no idea. It was a bit naive, though, on that level. You should know what you're packing. Particularly going into a foreign country where there may be, and she certainly understands some of the rules and regulations. This is not her first time going. She'd gone many times, but this time was a kind of irregular one because it was between the season. They all had a vacation. She chose to come back to the States and then to reenter, and that's where the problem occurred. She's coming back. Hurriedly packed, trying to get back with the UMMC team that she plays for over there, and have to understand the whole question between U.S. athletes going to Russia because of the dismal pay that they receive at the WNBA. So they have to supplement their salaries by going to play in the Middle East as well as in Russia. So it was nothing. This is a common path for her. What was uncommon was that she had to come back from a break in the season. They had a little hiatus where they could go and vacation, and some of her teammates, they went to other parts of Europe just to relax and then return to continue the season. So now we look at a situation where 9 years, my goodness, we talk about some of the excessive penalties we get in this country. That and she goes to something akin to Siberia.
I mean, he's going to some kind of prison colony, which is really where they where the brutalization, the torture, and all those things occur. So, I mean, you have to worry about her health and her condition at that time and whether she can survive that. But I don't think the swap is one that's equal. I mean, they talk about, you know, the Russians, they got an arms dealer. How is an arms dealer comparative, any kind of comparison to what's happening with someone who has 007%, you know, marijuana, you know, in these vape pipes? And even that is questionable. You're talking, they're arguing that her defense is that, you know, she's not a dealer. It was personal use. And she has pains. And the marijuana is a part of that treatment, you know, the whole CBD thing that people do with to ease the pains that they go through, particularly athletes. So she has some justification for using, obviously no justification for bringing it across the border. And she's got to pay for that. And that's just unfortunate. It's still up in the air, though, in Hotep. She may be able to, the U.S. government, Blinken, I mean, he's serious about this in terms of the swap. He's trying to put pressure on the Russian ambassador to kind of step up to the plate. And let's talk about this situation. They should be concerned because how lucrative she is to the whole, to the athletic and entertainment industry in Russia. She brings money to the table for these corporations over there. So you see, they're very much concerned about having her presence. She's an all-star performer, and she's a celebrity. She's like one of the top draws and attractions that they have in the UMMC Russian Basketball League. So they're going to miss her. Right? Did I lose you? Don't tell me I dropped.
Okay, it looks like we're experiencing some technical difficulties over on Imhotep's side. I'm going to get to the bottom of this, and hopefully it'll fix things sooner than later. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org
online.
And look, wait a minute. I seem like Imhotep is back and Herb is still on, so you can communicate now.
Okay.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Okay, Herb, I have no idea. I didn't see any lightning bolts flashing or something, but
you broke
something
it.
Hit.
Whoa.
But we're back nonetheless. In relationship to a couple areas, I want to make sure that we touch base with, the Griner being obviously one of them. In terms of what you were saying about that, do you anticipate with whatever the dynamics are, as I said, of other prisoners, if you will, whose voices are being heard now on the U.S. side as well, does that complicate the factor of the Griner release?
It certainly does. And one of the things about this is that one of the prisoners they're throwing into the mix is kind of a surprise. You know, wait a minute, here's a Russian, I mean, who's in a German prison. I mean, what does that got to do with us? We got a couple of U.S. people over there. We're trying to get out and say, okay, what can we say to Germany to let them go? It's almost like a baseball or the NFL trades go down. You know, I'm trading so-and-so for so-and-so to one team, but there's another team involved, so we got another player. I'll trade for that. I mean, so it gets complicated in terms of how you're going to get this swap even to get it underway because of the difficulty of having three nations involved now as opposed to just the Russian and the U.S.
That's right.
Keep
That's
it like right. that, then you still don't have the equivalency because of an arms trader, arms dealer, compared to someone who has like a small percentage of marijuana. There's no
That's right.
equivalency, no comparison whatsoever.
We have to move a little quickly because of the technical problem, but I want to squeeze a couple of points in. One, the jobs report, unprecedented unemployment, President Biden appearing in his virtual capacity saying, what recession? So the Democrats are having a moment of glee at the moment. What are your thoughts about how long-lived or short-lived this may be with the current economy?
Well, that's certainly any kind of good news is got to be welcome. Given all the bad news, and certainly you hold the monkeypox, what was happening with that, the whole weather situation, the heat wave that's sweeping the country. Hey, look here, Martha and the Vandellas, what's going on with that? But anyway, you got a situation on the global and climate change, what's happening. So it's good to have a report that shows, well, more than 500,000 new jobs. Heaven only knows. We always have to look at that with a certain kind of relative perspective in terms of what kind of jobs, you know, is a long-term, short-term, and what's the pay, what's going on with that. It's good to know that the unions are certainly excited about that news because, you know, they need to step up their whole push for support and making sure we're getting a fair deal. So that's good news. Let's find out how long it lasts, because the next thing you know, it's another dip. The inflation continues.
That
has nothing to do with inflation, really. I mean, that's something else in terms of people getting opportunity to spend a little bit more money. But at the same time, the cost of living continues to rise.
Absolutely. President Biden still, of course, battling COVID, apparently with some success, at least projected to be. Last point, Herb, President Lyndon Johnson signed the Voting Rights Act, if you will, in this time frame we're in, the bill that suspended literacy tests, allocated fellow examiners to the South. When we look back in time, going back to 1965, what are your thoughts about what we face right now, looking ahead, starting with the midterms and then ultimately the national general election?
Usually what the one thing that they throw in the mix on this discussion is, of course, Trump. To what extent, what impact is he having on the various outcomes? We got primaries coming up here, I guess, what, on the 23rd. We'll go out there, but other countries, other cities and states have had different times. We need to get some kind of coordination on that. That means so difficult to find out, like one state already had their primaries, so does that have an impact on another state? What happens with their turnouts and their vote count and what have you? But everything is so helter-skelter when it comes to understanding democracy in this country, say nothing of voting procedures. And one of the things about this, we still have to talk about the Electoral College. We cannot lose sight of that. But one interesting development, though, with Senator Susan Collins leading the way, and this is a Republican, so maybe you can get some bipartisan push in terms of really turning the Electoral College and making it a little bit more democratic. So, in other words, the popular vote will really mean something and not be thrown to some excessive, some relic coming out of the slavery period, because essentially that's what all the Electoral College is. Then we have to do something about filibuster. It may be not waiting for a 60 vote. I mean, if you got the more, if you got the majority, that ought to be enough. 51 as opposed to 49. Let it go at that. We got to have 60 of them come on, and it's not going to happen unless, and particularly with a Joe Manchin and the cinema out there, all kind of mischief, you might say,
Mischief makers, no doubt about it. Herb, I will see you on Sunday morning. Down the dial at BLS will be off on Sunday afternoon. Love you much, brother. Stay strong, please. Brother Herb Boyd with us tonight. What's going on inside of Radio GBE NYC at WBAI? We'll keep it moving. We had some technical problems, but we'll adjust our time frame to make up for that because we've got a lot to talk about with the brother joining us next. He is the host of Quantum Medicine. And, of course, as you know, I'm my own personal physician and physician to many of the tri-state area who are walking, running, and doing a lot of what we're doing because of him. I'm speaking of Dr. Kamal Kakai, who joins us next in Radio GBE at WBAI.
Well,
we're going to be taking a look at the state of the practice of medicine in these pandemic times and also preparing for the days ahead. Reports are there in the media, and I've shared them with you, which come not from any particular media outlet, but ultimately reports from the White House and an expectation of 100 million COVID infections this fall and winter. We have rising positivity rates across the USA and right here in New York City, New York State, the tri-state area as well. What does it all mean? Dr. Kamal Kakai joins us tonight inside of our broadcast, MD, integrative medicine doctor, founder of Healing Health Services, and as I mentioned, host of Quantum Medicine, heard Tuesdays at 2 p.m. right here at WBAI. It's a pleasure to welcome my brother to the airwaves tonight. Doc, good evening. How you doing?
Greetings, Imhotep. Yes, I am glad to be here, and but the news isn't the greatest from the standpoint of what's happening, what's being rolled out. If you remember, last winter was going to be the winter of death, you know, for many people, especially if you weren't vaccinated. And now there's a whole nother fear piece that's going to be put in place. And people are going to be driven like sheep to do whatever it is that they're instructed to do because of the fear that's put out. And there's no real actual discussion. There's a policy line relative to the virus, to the pandemic, and then other doctors that try to speak up, suggest something else, or look in another direction, they're either silenced, ignored, or worse. I mean, can't really say of worse, but they're not really heard is the point. So right now, if people just use their own common sense and just recall recent history relative to being told how they're going to be protected by the vaccine. And then month after month, even seeing, you know, the president
incredible
himself. Right. So people have to begin to question, like, why is this narrative being put forward when we can clearly see people around us who are vaccinated and getting sick, and people getting sick repeatedly. So the and this is something that, you know, could be predicted from a number of different ways. Certainly we've had those conversations with respect to what the boosting and everything over time can do to the body. And a lot of it we don't really know because we haven't put ourselves in this kind of situation before. Well, all of a sudden, these drugs are quickly approved and then put into play. And slowly, you're beginning to see reports, you know, expressing concern in different areas. But it takes a while for it to filter up the academic pipeline. So, and more than that, even in mainstream journals, the British Medical Journal actually cited the fact that academic medicine itself is really threatened because of the whole commercial instinct, the whole commercialism now, and how that controls what's studied, what's considered important, what's not given attention. I mean, and so you get everything steered in a particular direction, and it's really questionable. You know, recently, even around looking at, just knowing that these viruses can be created from scratch.
Yeah.
Now, they can be created from scratch. So whoever has that technology is then capable of doing whatever. And I'm suggesting to people, as I always have, that they have to do more or even do in place of certain things, you know, and really do some reading, studying on their own, right, beyond what they're just going to get going to the clinic or listening to mainstream media. But they have to do this because this is how, I mean, the world is changing right in front of us, and this has been used as a major vector to create the kind of social unrest, to create the divide, to create the economic reality the political and economic control to really change society in more ways than we might want to imagine. So for me, it's come down to that. So for me, it really comes down to, am I waiting to hear about the next vaccine? You know, I mean, as a physician, am I waiting to hear about that? Or I better dig in the medical books and start looking at, you know, other things that are accredited, that are working, and have that not only for myself and family, but for my clients. And what I shared is that other aspect of the immune system that's ignored, the innate immune system that keeps you from getting sick, if more emphasis were put on that, and that's why I feel that my clientele, the folks that were on their nutrients and immune boosting, you know, through this whole time, the amount of illness that they have is minimal. It's minimal. Right.
Yes.
And folks have to rely on more natural methods. I mean, you really have to look and think hard about this. The idea of you getting an injection every few months, you know, to do something that's really outside the realm of what vaccinations have been like in terms of what really constituted vaccination, the immunity that you have. So not only isn't stopping infection, right, because you're getting people getting sick, you know, and then usually the argument is made, well, you know, if they didn't have a shot, they would have got sicker. In the meantime, everything else that's out there that could also be used is ignored or poo-pooed. And so, I mean, I'm really just tired of it, and it's really time to talk about solutions, given what's happening, the kind of disintegration that's slowly happening, and the whole political process, the whole access to any number of goods and services, right? Everything is changing, and folks have to really take a minute and step back and say, what was it like 5 years ago, and what is it like right now? You know, on any level they want to talk about, the stress in the air, the amount of money in their bank, but this isn't something to like business as usual, you know? So, but I don't know if you want to ask me anything. I just went on a rant, but...
I got to tell you something. I was thinking when you were just talking, something came to me, which a WBAI New York. I'm going to go back for a minute, at least probably two decades at least. You and I were having a conversation, and we were talking about the sort of thing we're talking about right now, health wise and what was in the environment and so forth. And you made a comment. I'm talking about like the pre cell phone period, right? You know, where it was an exception to have a cell phone, right? Okay. And I remember these words that you said to me. You said, we will reach a point, you said, where people, if they're wise, will not be using public telephones. This is what you said to me. And I said, what do you mean? And you said, well, and then you began a conversation that relates to what we see right now with people being concerned about infectious services, you know, surfaces and all and so forth. And now, of course, how many people would even begin to think about using a public phone at this point? That's like, you know, out of bounds totally.
But, you know, for me, it was one and the same. I did this whole piece in 2020. From mushroom clouds to microbes. Mushroom clouds to microbes. As above, so below, right? It's the same intent in terms of level of destructiveness, right?
Yes.
It's just working at a different level of energy matter organization, you know? But the result is still pretty devastating.
That's so, right. Exactly.
You know, I had done this film with Eitan Edwards called 4 Days, where we actually, you know, this is early, mid-2000s, we looked at the possible disasters that the United States was facing. You know, we visited different specialists in the area. But clearly, this is one particular route that is evolving in ways that even if, even the forces that set it in motion cannot really control. You know,
I hesitate to bring this in terms of what I'm about to say. You and I have had an exchange in which you turned me on to this particular information concerning a thought that was not, if you will, a thought that a lot of people didn't have early on, hearing Wuhan, hearing China, et cetera, and so forth, about what the possibilities were. But you shared a piece with me that raises some questions from a brilliant, established, qualified, heralded expert, and all that, who ultimately talks about the issue of COVID as a bioweapon. And the interview is very much a lightning rod, it would seem to me, when you said about a vector, that there's a vector that it opens up, that in the middle of the political dynamics that we're in right now, just look with Pelosi and the Taiwan thing and China and so forth.
Oh my God, I mean,
this particular thing is, you know, you said mushroom cloud. This particular interview, which is public, it's online, as you said, temporarily. But frankly, I mean, it could ultimately be something that could, as they say, set it off, literally, on the issue of what this doctor is mentioning and the evidence he's presenting of COVID as a bioweapon.
Right. Well, and even beyond that, it's the role that the three-letter agencies play in passing over things and just, you know, approving, and things go on to the next step. And a lot of doctors that are really into their craft or not corporate doctors are like, this, we've never seen anything like this. You know, I was on the radio with Dr. Moore the other day, and I mean, he had to say, you know, he's not trying to push the vaccines on all the patients that come in, because they're just questions that need to be answered, and informed consent really needs to be informed consent.
Of course. Exactly. Exactly.
Right.
I mean, Doc, I mean, there's a place where, okay, fine. If you tell me that I'm going to be taking something, but yet I will still possibly be able to get the disease, but I'm going to have a greater level of protection, but also I'm going to now be able to not just get it in spite of the vaccine, but I'll also be able to transmit it even with the vaccine. Tell us that in advance. That's all. Just say it in advance.
Right. Man.
Goodness.
In the meantime, all the things that folks can't make a lot of money on, they get passed over. I tell folks, I always say this, if you think you've been exposed, you get some good nasal wash, nasal saline, X-Clear, alkalol, nasal wash, and you get a strong oral antiseptic, and you do that several times in a day to help decrease viral replication and viral load. It makes a difference. And, you know,
Simple.
Having, I mean, just certain nutrient levels that you want to have in place. I mean, so many people think, oh, I think I'm sick, and then they start taking extra D and C. I mean, the literature suggests that stuff don't even work at that point. You know, you're trying to work with your innate immune system so that it's primed and ready. It's primed and ready, which the body has the capacity to be, you know, without having to go through waiting for another technological development. The exchange of wealth is taking place. The fact that, you know, money is spent before things are actually totally approved and vetted.
That's right.
It's like
that's
a
right.
faucet has just been opened, and it's just all of this, you know, all of this money, power, and other possibilities are just going down the tube. You know, so I mean, I have a lot of concern from, you know, and within all that, we are spiritual beings having this human experience, and we really can't identify with the fear and all the other stuff that's being projected, because that calibration of your consciousness is not going to help you to arrive at solutions and things that you can do to make a difference for yourself, your family, and your community. So people have to stay strong at this point. So all the stuff we talk about, getting enough sleep, exercising, trying to eat right, all these things, they're little things, but they're things that can tip the scale.
That's right. You know, that's right. Exactly.
Things that can tip the scale. And with the stuff that's coming out in the environment, you got to be ready and primed. So,
okay. But, so listen, I've got my next a visit with you ready on the innate immune system. Okay, so we'll have a little time. We're not on Sunday, or I do it right away to tell you the truth. But I'll talk with you, work out your schedule, and that'll be our next topic, the innate immune system, and laying down some foundational steps, and obviously reminding people of some things that you have already said, but ultimately add to whatever we can in terms of their kit, their health kit that they actually
need
to be ready for the days ahead.
Exactly.
Dr. Kamal Kakai, brother, of course, 2 p.m. on Tuesday, Quantum Medicine with Dr. Kamal Kakai. And of course, as I mentioned, when his colleague, Dr. Moore, was with us, Dr. Kakai practices out of two locations, one in Brooklyn with Dr. Moore. That's one block away from Grand Army Plaza subway station, Prospect Heights, and also in Los Angeles, California, near the Grove Mall. And he has saved many and continues to do so. And we certainly greatly appreciate him for it. Give thanks, my brother. Have a great weekend.
All right. Thank you, brother. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you, brother. Dr. Kamal Kakai, integrative medicine doctor, founder of Healing Health Services. You're listening to Metep Gary Bird's Radio GBE NYC at WBAI New York. Well, as we move into hour number two of Radio GBE tonight, as I said before, it is a segment that we'll start off musically speaking with our global beat that'll be dedicated to a Buffalo colleague of mine. East High School, of course, was where I went, and he and I used to play football up in that area in Buffalo, New York. And he was I didn't know him as Rick James. He has another name, which is how I knew him. I knew him as James Johnson. And so all the time when I was hearing about Rick James, I didn't really realize it was James Johnson. So one day I was in California, actually, recording at Wonderland Studios. And so I was on my way to do a session, and somebody was in there, you know, before me. And they said, hey, man, you know, like your flanker back from Buffalo wants to see you. You know, I said, what do you mean? They said, he's in the studio, your flanker back from Buffalo. I go, oh, okay. So I roll in the studio, and when I roll in the studio, there's Rick James in the studio, you know, cutting the track or something, right? And so he sees me, and he stops, you know, stops a song, and he stops, and he walks over, you know, to the glass, and he lifts up his braids, and he says, James Johnston. And then he says something, Reggie, that I can't say on the air. M starts with an M. I said, yo, I said, you Rick James? Because as my flanker back, he was James Johnson. Okay, so unbelievable, but a true story. Rick, of course, prolific, a genius, and, you know, if you will, he was himself. Let's put it that way, right? Well, what you're going to be looking at in terms of August 6th is a day which many of us remember. It was a day in which Rick James died, the king of punk funk, of a heart attack at his Los Angeles home. 12 pop hits, 27 R&B charters are just part of the story. He was an icon, influence on a generation of rappers, hip-hop artists, and any number of different folks in the industry. The list is many who appreciated him, as I said, for his own personality, being himself, and also for what he could do inside a studio. This evening, inside of our broadcast, moving into this very, deep weekend for some of us who had connection with Rick, is Rick James on the message music side. Inside of our Global Beat experience, where the message is in the music, looking at what just happened in Buffalo, New York, our hometown up in the Great Lakes. These songs will perhaps take on a new significance for many of you. But he's there. The message in the music is from the late Rick James inside of Radio GBE at WBAI. The spirit of Rick James, alive and well, from Buffalo, New York, our hometown, upstate, if you will. Ghetto life, and Mr. Policeman. And to those of you who are coming into late acknowledgement and awareness of some of what is happening upstate, that pretty much hits it. It certainly, if you will, where we experience the ghetto, certainly in the same context as much of what you've seen from Buffalo to Minneapolis and various parts, of course, of the country as well. His memory's still with us, and we certainly will be, if you will, sending the vibrations to his family, his friends, his followers. King of Punk Funk, Rick James, 2004. He died on August 6th. Yeah, my flanker back, back in the day. Well, we are, of course, moving right now into the month of August. And for me, over the years, I came to understand and really did all of our GBE designations for August as being a Celebrate Harlem Month. Okay. When I realized that Harlem Week was the longest month of the year. So I said, well, I'm just going to call it Celebrate Harlem Month. And that's what we've done, certainly from the early point that we began creating our GBE concept and expanding it over the years. And there's, of course, a lot going on with the 48th annual Harlem Week Festival, which, as they say, is easily upon us. The time frame is here. We are counting down, and the activities essentially begin August 12th through August 21st. And there's a place where, you know, there's so many wonderful things happening. And they've put together, and I say they, Brother Lloyd Williams and the GHCC team, incredible theme for the overall dynamics of the event that week. It's called Inspiration, Impact, and Legacy. That's the theme. Inspiration, Impact, and Legacy. And they have a number of really powerful events that are going to be a part of your opportunity of participating, both on the virtual and the in-person level as well. They have an event called the New York City Jobs and Career Fair, which they'll be doing, along with the Anti-Gun Violence Walk. These are two very important highlighted events. The Anti-Gun Violence Health Walk is a live in-person event that will be occurring in concert with the NAACP, the New York Urban League, the National Action Network, and others. Now, you could register to be a part of the walk by going to nyrr.org. That's nyrr.org/races/Percy Sutton Harlem Walk. Again, that's nyrr.org/races/Percy Sutton Harlem Walk. And of course, there is the signature outdoor days that happen August 14th and August 20th and 21st. And these are some very powerful events, including Sunday, August 14th, a great day in Harlem. The music theme is the one that's playing behind me, Mercy, Mercy Me, from Marvin Gaye. Brother Lloyd Williams and the GHCC team have hooked up an incredible thematic piece for the overall event, which really pulls from the thematics of the great Marvin Gaye classic, What's Going On. And some of the amazing songs in it are part of the themes for some of the events that will be taking place, like the one happening on Sunday, August 14th, A Great Day in Harlem. The music theme, again, Mercy, Mercy Me. The day is going to be featuring international vendors and exhibitors, the arts, roots and rhythm, a performance segment featuring local organizations and companies like Uptown Dance Academy, Unveiled, Unlocked, Impact Repertory Theater, a host of others. And then the Harlem Week Gospel Caravan, which is going to be hosted by WBLS's Liz Black, my sister, and also NY anchor and author Cheryl Mills, beautiful sister, and featuring the Sing Harlem Choir from the Mama Foundation. Of course, that is again another sister of mine, Vi Higginson. The Isn't Her Grace Amazing Choir, and much more. They'll have a tribute to the Calypso legend Lord Nelson, and also Grammy Award nominated, I should say, soul singer and songwriter Kenny Lattimore. There'll be a music tribute to Marvin Gaye with Ray Chu and the Harlem Music Festival All-Stars and much, much more. And then you move to Saturday, August 20th, where they have Summer in the City. The music theme is going to be Save the Children, featuring an international vendor operation and exhibitors. Day one of the Upmarket Pavilion, day one of the New York City Children's Festival, the Alex Trebek Spelling Bee, the Back to School Children's Fashion Show, adult fashion shows as well, and the Jeff Fox Band performing live, my brother from the Great Lakes, Ohio bound. That's right. And his partnership with the mayor's office, Rise Up NYC series. They have a hip-hop duo EPMD, R&B star Donnell James, and the great Freddie Jackson, plus much, much more. Then August 21st, Harlem Day. It's going to be featuring under the musical theme, What's Going On? A Harlem Day salute to NYPD fallen heroes. They'll have three stages of entertainment, international vendors and exhibitors, day two of the Upmarket Pavilion, and part two of the NYC Children's Festivals. And they're going to have performances from Broadway shows, including Michael Jackson, the musical, Hagestown, The Lion King, Aladdin, and much more. And there's actually a special tribute to Reggie, this guy called Imhotep Gary Bird, in connection with the Hip Hop Hall of Fame.
Never heard of him.
I mean, either. I don't know who that guy is anyway. And they'll
I
have
think
performances.
He owes me money.
That's me too. That's right. Exactly. They're going to have a tremendous list of Hip Hop Hall of Fame activity with performances from legends like CL Smooth, Melly Mel of Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, Hip Hop Pioneer, Grandmaster Caz, and much more. And I greatly appreciate the honor as well. Our second day in partnership with Rise Up NYC features performances from Drew Hill, Slick Rick, Dougie Fresh, and much, much more. It's going to be a tremendous festival. And for those of you who certainly know that, you know, Harlem Week is more than a week. It's the longest week in the year, and they fill it up, I'm telling you, with some amazing levels of activity. So make it a point to be a part of the experience. And remember, as we say, the great thing about it is that you can actually experience it, not just the in-person level, but on a virtual level, and not just locally, but nationally and internationally as well. And that's just a tremendous, if you will, opportunity for brothers and sisters who hear about Harlem Week, but may not necessarily be able to travel in the times that we live and all that, be able to tag in and really get some really, really beautiful, beautiful level of experiences in connecting with what is essentially the number one black community in the world. Harlem Week, a very special event that celebrates under the theme of what's going on, the issues that we face as a people. And those issues are certainly inspiration, impact, and legacy, a hybrid live and virtual event. Again, for those of you who want to be a part of the anti-gun violence health walk live in-person event, go to nyrr.org/races/Percy Sutton Harlem Walk. And you can be a part of that event on the live level as well. Greater Harlem Chamber of Commerce.com, of course, online, has tremendous information. You can just plug in Harlem Week under your search index and you'll get everything that you need to be a part of it. All right, we continue to move on this Friday night in Radio GBE NYC with my Piscean sister in soul standing by to join us tonight. I'm speaking of Vanette K. Price, globetrotting tonight at WBAI. Is a weekly columnist for Caribbean Life, the largest Caribbean circulated newspaper in the USA, entertainment editor at iretimes.com, and writes for a wide variety of global publications as well. And not only does she cover the arts and entertainment side, she's got that activist flavor in her catalog as well. It's my pleasure to welcome a Piscean sister and soul born the same day, Vanette K. Price. Hey V, how you doing? Oh, okay. Hello? I guess they're still making the connection. She'll be with us.
No. I look like something happened and just got to call it back.
Well, listen, something's going on. Could be the heat. Stuff's been dropping
out. Never say never.
I've got to tell you, it's the truth. Okay, you take care of that. Yeah, but to Reggie's, to what I'm saying, what Reggie's point is, you never know. I noticed earlier today when I was actually, watching a couple of things, news, a couple of things like that, that they kept cutting on. I was like, what's going on with this? What's happening? And it dawned on me because at the same time, we're all getting these messages from Con Ed talking about the heat index and, what all that's about. And ultimately, as we know, we're in a heat wave. There's no doubt about that. We are up in it. And ultimately, yes, it does affect things. There's no question about that. So, it could be anything at this point in time. But it gives me a chance to also urge many of you who are right now in a position right now where you're going in and out of the heat and so forth, to just make sure that you keep yourself hydrated. I say it all the time. It took me a little while to really get my water thing together and to drink as much water as I can. I probably drink more water than I should at this point because I drink a lot. But ultimately, this is especially a time frame in which you need it. Okay.
Okay.
So my sister is ready. Just a quick note again, weather-wise, we are dealing with some very, very serious weather. Fortunately, I understand thunderstorms and showers are coming, and don't we need it? The planet needs hydration. All right, Vanessa K. Price, standing by to join us tonight, Globetrotting in the Experience. Hey, V, how you doing?
I'm trying to stay cool.
Hey, got to try. You got to try.
Yes, the heat is really, really on. But Hotep, as far as Jamaicans are concerned, whether they're in Canada or if they're in England or Switzerland, wherever they are, this weekend is a big deal for them because they're celebrating the 60th anniversary of Jamaica's decision of becoming a self-governing nation. That's what
Hooray. That's right.
It got independence from Britain, and tomorrow is their 60th anniversary. So, along with everything that's happening on the Canadian side, the Niagara Falls is going to be lit in black, green, and gold. And I know that's going to be beautiful. Usually, it's the Empire State Building is happening, but lots of places, and they're having flag-raising ceremonies everywhere, even in Switzerland. In Rochester, in Newark. Yeah, I didn't see Buffalo. I saw Rochester, but I didn't see Newark.
When you say Toronto, you might as well be saying Buffalo.
You're right. I'm sure they just run across the border.
That's all it is.
So their theme this year is reigniting for greatness. A nation reigniting for greatness. And
great.
Lots of celebration happening. And one of the things that's happening that is not sanctioned by the government or, the consul general is a Bakra festival. And now I'm going to let my guest, I do have a guest, and he's going to tell us a little bit about this Caribbean cultural festival that's happening on Jamaica's independence. And the artistic director, Andrew Clark, tells me it is not just marking Jamaica's independence, but also Trinidad and Tobago's independence, because right after Jamaica got independence on August 6th, Trinidad got their independence on August 31st.
Okay.
So both countries will be celebrating with an all-day festival from 12 to 8 p.m., at York College, York Performing Arts Center, and that's in Queens. So folks in New York have a lot of different places to go, lots of choices to make, and they can go to the flag-raising ceremony at Borough Hall at 9 o'clock and still make the 12 o'clock festival celebration, which is going to feature J.C. Lodge and Marvin Newton and lots of other folks. But I do have the artistic director who is always on point, always, carrying the flag of the Caribbean. He not only carries one flag, but he carries lots of flags. He carries the flags of all the countries. And I hope we have him online to tell us a little bit about the Bakra Caribbean Cultural Festival that's happening tomorrow. Hi,
yes,
Andrew.
Yes, I'm... How you doing?
I am doing fine. How are you?
I am good. I'm good, exhausted but inspired because of the work that we're doing. We know that we're preparing something really great for folks to come out and enjoy on Independence Day tomorrow.
And, you know, Gary, sometimes I introduce Andrew and I don't talk about his credentials because it's so much on his plate. And I just assume that everybody knows who Andrew Clark is. But he's a very distinguished singer, a dancer, a performer. He's just everything. So just excuse me this one time because he's going to do a little performance for us and just show us a little bit about his talented. But believe me, he is one guy that wears a lot of hats, and I believe him when he says he's exhausted. But Andrew,
Renaissance man.
Yes, he's a Renaissance man, definitely. So, Andrew, what can we expect tomorrow?
Tomorrow is a day of activities for the family. We're encouraging folks to just bring a blanket and a chair. That's all you need. Bring a blanket and a chair and some good energy. If you have a tambourine or a little drum, we start our day off with a drum circle at 1 p.m. So gate open promptly at 12, and we'll have lots of vendors from food to craft and gift items. We're going to have New York City Health Department doing vaccines and COVID testing, and other health services are going to be available. The drum circles at 1 p.m. We'll be jamming for about an hour just with drums and instruments and our voices and bodies dancing up and playing, paying homage to our ancestors. There's going to be also a play zone, and notice I didn't say the kids zone because it's not just for the children, it's for the young and young at heart. The idea is that we bring, you know, the old and the young together to play games, to teach these kids dandy shandy and Chinese skip and ring games, these things that are very rarely played, but they were commonplace in the Caribbean islands, you know, 20, 30 years ago. So we really want to bring back that aspect of playing together. And of course, you know, storytelling. There's also a cultural exhibit with some life-size puppets of rolling calf, all these mythical folk characters from the Caribbean, Laja Bless, Sukunya, Anansi, you know, I could just to name a few, and then some nice friendly races, you know, three-legged race, egg and spoon, or lime and spoon race, the 50 over 50 race, and then they culminate with a cultural concert at 4 p.m. And as I mentioned, JC Lodge is performing. We have a surprise guest coming from Jamaica. There's also Marva Newton, she flew in from Trinidad and Tobago. She's representing Trinidad and flying the Calypso and Kaiso flag. Carnival dancers also representing Trinidad and Tobago, Baraka folk singers and some other performers.
Now, Andrew, I know you weren't born when Jamaica got independence, but what do you remember about independence time in Jamaica during August?
Oh my gosh, I mean, independence time it becomes a whole activity from the year start, the month starts, because with the month of August for Jamaica, the 1st of August is Emancipation Day. And so we start the commemoration and celebration of emancipation from the 1st of August. We call that August morning, right through until the 6th, leading into the 7th. So anything from street dances, you know, the National Stadium has this fantastic parade and showcase called Grand Gala that brings together dance groups and classic cars or beauty queens all at the National Stadium. You know, each parish had its own version of the float and parade locally. I think about things, I'm in the performing arts, so for a lot of young people coming through the festival, performing arts competitions, our culminating performance was this thing called Mellow-Go-Round, where the best of the best performances would be showcased for the island, you know, on TV. So that was always a big thing. So really, festival was the time. It's just at 6 to 7 days of nonstop parties and celebration. It's really a time where patriotism is at an all-time high. And this concept and idea of being Jamaican is amplified, you know, even more.
Now, one of the things that I know must have been very, very prevalent was dialect verses. People always pay homage to Jamaican Jamaica's language, the patois, the creole, the way we speak. Yes. Can you give us a little sampling of that?
Ah, geez, you really, really have put me on the spot, you know. All right, so let me see if I
guess that did it.
That did it. But so as you mentioned the Jamaican language, the person that readily comes to mind, of course, is Dr. the Honorable Louise Bennett Coverley, commonly known as Miss Lou, and she always wrote these dialect verses, as they were called, in the Jamaican dialect, in Jamaican language, and it was a lot of social commentary. You know, so anything from rolling calves to a child, you know, starting their first day in school. So one of the ones I think about, I don't remember all of it, but this one says, "Me glad to see you come back, boy, but Lord, you let me down. Me proud of you so till hall, and me proud, me shame of you so till hall, and me proud this trap a grown. You mean you go to America and spend 6 whole months there and come back not a penny more than where you go, eh? Welcome to your drifts is good." And this is a mother lamenting her son for the fact that you went all the way to America and did come back looking like a foreigner, because the expectation oftentimes is when we go to America, we come back to yard and we're supposed to be looking trash and ready. In the 90s, we used to say you're looking trash. That means you're looking really decked out. So this is the mother lamenting the fact that, you know, her son just came back looking ordinary, and she's really embarrassed because she can't tell anybody in the village that her son actually went to America, because he definitely doesn't look that way.
Well, thank you so much for that, Andrew. Yes, we have an idea about Miss Louise Bennett Coverley and what she did for Jamaican patois. And they call it dialect verse, but we call, you know, everybody likes to recite during Independence time a little bit of dialect verse, so we thank you for that. Now, your event is from 12 to 8 p.m. tomorrow, and the Brata Folk Singers will be performing, so I'm sure you'll be on stage, or you'll be doing administrative
I will be. I'm going to be pulling double and triple duties tomorrow. I may make a solo appearance as well. But yeah, definitely going to be jamming with the Brata Folk Singers.
So you'll be dressed in your colors?
Yes, man. Yes, we'll be in our bright colors.
Well, good luck to you. And it sounds like Miss Lou is coming in the background. So let's take a listen. Thank you and good luck for our production.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Thank you both.
Rhymo. 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 One day you will have a golly. One day you will have a golly. Rhymo, 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 golly. Rhymo, 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 golly. One day you will have a golly. One day you will have a golly. Rhymo, 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 golly. Rhymo, 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 golly. One day you will have a golly. One day you will have a golly. Rhymo. Rhymo, rhymo, golly, rhymo. One day you will have a golly,
rhymo.
One day you will have a golly,
rhymo.
One day you will have a golly,
rhymo.
One day you will have a golly, rhymo.
Wow. Beautiful.
That's the famous Miss Louise Bennett, and we'll be hearing it tomorrow. A lot of lot of people will be reciting some of her poetry. She passed away, but you know her. She will never die.
Oh yeah, she was great. Never die.
Like
never.
Of Rick James, you know, she is forever.
That's right. You made me remember something. I recall when I was starting, you know, take my my trips to Jamaica, you know, years ago when I started going. I did a lot of my writing in Jamaica, actually, as a matter of fact. And I remember this sister made me these chocolate chip cookies, right, on the island. And, you know, I was, you know, really excited. You know, she said, yes, I bake you some cookies, because I was really into my cookie thing then, right? So she brings me these cookies, V. And she brought me the cookies, so I wasn't necessarily thinking that they were for her too. Okay, I was. She brought me the cookies, so I'm reaching in the bag, and she said to me, she said, "Boy, you're gravelicious with them cookies." I said,
and you're like, "What is gravelicious?" Well, you knew exactly what she meant.
I said, what did you say? He said, you gravelicious with them cookie. What's this gravelicious thing? Man, I'm telling, I mean, I think I laughed the whole trip.
Because it could mean you're greedy and you're grabbing and you're, you know, it could mean anything. But you know what it means.
Yep, you know I knew. I got it. Real quick, the word spoke for itself, you know. You know.
Definitely,
I mean,
definitely.
No question.
So tomorrow is a big day. You know, Imhotep, there's something I neglected to mention last week, and I have to mention it. It was the opening of the Jackie Robinson Museum.
And I had that too. I was going to say something about that too. I can't believe you said that.
Yes,
oh gosh,
I completely forgot. It's at 100 Square, and folks need to just check it out. It was fantastic just to see Rachel Robinson there and Jackie Robinson's son. I mean, both the couple's son there speaking up about the power and the might of his father and the glory. So
yeah, we'll follow up with that. We got to follow that one up real quick. I had the same thing I had in my notes. I just forgot to do it. That was on me for sure. No question. That deserved full acknowledgement. No question about it.
So,
yeah.
Imhotep, I'm going to get my black, green, and gold ready for tomorrow, and we'll talk.
Sounds good, V. Stay strong.
Thank you.
Vinay Price, my Piscean sister and soul, joining us, globetrotting inside of Radio GBE at WBAI. I'm moving into our final moments of our broadcast tonight, and actually taking a look at very important dynamics that have occurred on this day in terms of the spirit that we ultimately look at when we celebrate our great ones. Two of them, Dr. Daniel Hale Williams, educator and pioneer heart surgeon, died on this date in 1931. Without using anesthesia, Williams performed the world's first successful open heart surgery at Provident Hospital in Chicago, Illinois, in 1893, a hospital he founded. Also on this date, we acknowledge Daniel Louis Satchmo Armstrong, legendary trumpet player born in New Orleans, Louisiana, this date in 1901. Until recently, he was believed and born apparently on July 4th, 1900. That's what I heard most of the time, but apparently the two dates are celebrated. Well, tonight inside of the broadcast, we celebrate with one of the all-time classics from Satchmo, Inside of the Experience. I recall the first time I heard the song, and I think there's a place when you're growing up, and especially as many of us did, baby boomers, you know, and we had that revolutionary spirit, this and the other, and some of us understood Satchmo, some of us didn't. If you're into jazz, you had a better understanding. If you didn't, you know, you wonder where's this guy coming from and all of that and so forth. But of course, we look back now and realize not only was he a legendary trumpet player, recording artist, vocalist, band leader, and a global ambassador of jazz, who ultimately was able to bring another kind of spirit, another kind of, if you will, soul. I mentioned Dr. Daniel Hale Williams in terms of heart, and that is really very much where soul comes from, the heart. And this particular performance that I want to share with you from Satchmo is, to me, one of the all-time most beautiful songs that I have ever heard. And every time I hear it, it touches me in a particular kind of spirit. And I've heard so many people copy the song that I know that must be what's going on. not that way, Marvin Gaye, but I mean, people are having the same experience that I have, because the song just will not die. It lives forever, as does the spirit of Satchmo. The song is a song that talks about the world that we live in and how wonderful this world can be. And there's a place, I think, that when many of us are in a position where we are dealing with all the challenges that we are, it's very easy to forget what a wonderful world it actually is. We give thanks tonight to Brother Reggie Johnson, mix mastering for us, of course, inside the broadcast. Also, Sister Nyari Shannon, in production support inside of Radio GBE. And of course, our thanks to Brother Herb Boyd and to Brother Attorney Michael Hardy joining us in the experience, and Dr. Kamal Kakai. Most of all, we thank you. Remember to support WBAI, give 2 WBI is our donation site. And of course, you can call us at 212-209-2950. Make whatever donations you like. They all will help the cause. We always say to you and yours, the key to tomorrow is what we do today. The decision to work or whether to play. Both have their place in the human life stream, but only one will achieve your dream. Remember that life is the ultimate trip once you learn to experience it, because in the end, experience is the best teacher. We're off on Sunday afternoon, but we'll see you a couple of weeks from now back here at Radio GBE on WBAI.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white. The bright blessed day, the dark sacred night. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They learn much more than I ever knew. And I think to myself, what a wonderful. I think